Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires that we call the internets is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
I'm doing okay, I guess.
We don't have any special guests today, do we?
No, we don't.
Oh, thank you. Oh, God, I hate wearing pants when we podcast. Ah, much better.
I don't understand the whole, you're working from home, you don't have to wear pants.
Well, it's not...
What are we? Somali pirates?
They wear pants.
Oh, well,
trust me,
we're
you don't want a flying fish to grab you while you're... No, I just figure I'd just slip into something a little more comfortable.
Ooh, you're wearing your Playboy smoking jacket?
I've got my Mr. Rogers sweater. Have we ever talked about my Mr. Rogers sweater?
You mean your ECW sweater?
Well, no, it was called that because when we went over to the then boss, now friend, Scott Nutter, we'd go over to his house to watch ECW. And I was well aware that he always kept the house a little cool for my taste. So I would take off my coat. And being diabetic, I always put on my own slippers because, you know, you're in somebody else's house, take your shoes off. And then, of course, I put on this large knit red sweater. And he laughed and laughed and called it my Mr. Rogers sweater. So then, I mean, the only time I would wear it in public, other than like I'm wearing it now, is when he would come over to watch a pro wrestling thing. So I would sit down and... take off my whatever and put on my sweater. So, and believe me, folks, it's a beautiful day in the podcast world.
Well, it is.
How are you doing?
Well, I had yesterday off.
You slacker. And
every
you didn't want a pod?
I was working 12 to 16 hours. And they literally told me when they asked me to work an extra 4 hours on Saturday, they said, now you would be working over at this cottage, but we don't like people to work in more than two cottages over a certain amount of time. And you've worked in two different cottages today, basically, so that if somebody is sick in one of the cottages, it doesn't spread to all of them. So they said, give us a call around 6 a.m. And if no one is called in sick, you can have tomorrow off. So on my one day off, I had to wake up at 6 a.m. to call to make sure that I still had it off.
That kind of sounds like what's going on at my work, because I got a call that I have a new schedule going. And what they're going to do is they're marking us very minimal because there's nothing going on.
Yeah.
Nobody's flying. There's rumors they're going to shut everything down. Canada airspace, maybe U.S. airspace, hard to say. So... what they're doing is they have the minimum staffing and then everybody else is on call. So if like somebody calls in sick, then, well, you got 2 hours to get your butt in.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure some people will complain and moan about. But as you know, when I worked my National Deployment Force days once upon a time, it was that was just SOP. You know, I mean, I never got called to like move within 4 hours, although I did get a call to move like within 24. So it was like noon, jumped in the shower, jumped back out. And it was, I had gotten a call saying, we need you to deploy. Just call back and tell me where that you can. Had nothing else. Didn't even know where I was going. Didn't know what I was doing. And just call back and say, yep, ready to go. And that's how I ended up in New York. Well, New Jersey, but so you can go back and look those up. That was fun. I mean, I wasn't there for a fun reason, but it was fun to visit all the comic shops in Manhattan.
Now, the office job is basically saying that any hours, please take them. And they've said that if they don't get enough people, there's mandatory overtime. Now, on my regular clients that I do, they're actually kind of slow right now. One of them is a chain of pet veterinary hospitals, and they have all but shut down. And when people are out on leave for them, that's all handled by payroll. So the, another one of my clients processes, basically they process stuff, and they're all working from home. You could tell when they call, because it's like normally when you call, when they call, you can hear the office. And now when you call, you hear birds and dogs and cats and stuff. And the other is medical facilities. So they're open. But there's one of our clients that is very big and has a whole bunch of people that are still working. And they have were going to have us help out for their open enrollment. And it is now turned into, well, you're helping out all the time now. Now, did we, Joe, here's the important question to ask me. Could you please ask me, Corey, were you given training on any of this stuff?
Corey, were you given training on any of this stuff?
Oh, heavens no.
Heavens no. Heavens to Megatribe.
Basically, I'm like, if somebody asks a question I don't know about, I'm digging through all the files and everything to, okay, here's your answer. And they say, well, you know, you could message us for help, but there's so few people working that when you message someone for help, they're probably on a call, so they don't get back to you for 3 to 5 minutes. Every time I've messaged, I get a thing back like after 5 minutes. Are you still on the phone with that person? Well, no, I can't put them on hold for 5 minutes. So it's been hectic. The only saving grace is that the group home, because all of the a lot of our staff work other places because all those other places are shut down. There are staff who are able to work early mornings and during the day, but the evenings when I work, it's still hard because, you know, people don't want to work in the evening. Hey, if I can work during the day, I don't want to work after 6 at night. Okay, fine. So that's the update on Corey. And Joe, we've gotten the update on your job. And here's the update on comics. Somebody tried to put together a digital distribution thing through comic shops, and it fell apart faster than the announcement came out.
I was hearing about that.
It was funny where it's, this is going to save everyone. And then a day later, it fell apart.
Have you been out? I mean, you can't go to, obviously, comic shops, but have you been to any other stores?
I go to Target, the grocery store once a week. What was it? Saturday. I had promised the clients that we would bake something because we were watching one of those baking shows where it's okay. Somebody comes out with their groceries and the chef buys their groceries and has to make something out of what the groceries are. And one of the people, it's like, oh, instant coffee and eggs and this and that. And then chocolate cake mix. And they went, oh, I'll make a mocha cake with the instant coffee and the other stuff and the cake mix. And one of the clients was like, we need to do that. So that was going to be our Saturday activity. Well, all the grocery stores are closed by the time I leave work. And they don't open when I go to work. So Saturday morning.
I did notice the Cub Foods by my place is open 24/7 after cutting their hours back before the pandemic. And now, so I don't know if you have a Cub Foods within distance.
The one around here, it closes at 10.
Okay. So that must just be because of the.
You know, I think it's the bigger ones because the grocery store right next to the group home opens at 7:30. So I woke up early to get there, and, you know, the first hour is for, you know, emergency essential workers and older people, but I had my letter so that I could get in, bought all the stuff, and that's what we did Saturday. Other than that, I think I went, I didn't go grocery shopping this week because I went last week, and even during normal times, I only go every 2 weeks. And now that they're saying, please don't shop as much as you used to. Okay.
I actually read reports of some places, not around us, but closing non-essential areas of the store.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to discourage people from just wandering about.
Yeah.
And I understand that. That was one of the big things when I was on the road, where people have what they call, you're just bored. And people are going to Walmart to get their groceries or whatever. And you're like, yeah, hang around, picking up shit you don't need.
Yeah.
So, but I do have something if you're interested in helping out the comic book industry.
Sure.
Can do. The Book Industry Charitable Foundation, they are shaping up as a key nonprofit for collecting and distributing relief funds for comic stores, bookstores, and their employees. DC Comics just donated like $250,000. And I know that you're a big Jim Lee fan. So if you go to this eBay site, Chunky Money... hang on a second. I just got to wash my lips here. Chunky Monkey...
What are you drinking?
0000. That's Chunky Monkey 40s. You will find that Jim Lee is donating 60 sketches of DC characters to be auctioned off, the proceeds going to the Book Industry Charitable Foundation. Matter of fact, he has, the first time Jim Lee's ever drawn, Big Barda, which we all know is created by Jack the King Kirby. So if you jump over to that there site, unfortunately, by the time this here podcast drops, it'll be gone. But there's only been four. There should be some other ones there. Right now, going for a mere $2,425.
Oh.
With, you know, even with $50 shipping fee. I mean, come on. This is Jim Lee. Yeah, there were three up there when I looked yesterday. Actually, this morning. And there are four up there today. So I don't know how long the proceeds or how long they've been running. But hopefully by the time this podcast hits, you'll be able to check it out here. I'm just trying to look to see when they start. Ah, whatever. You'll either get a chance. But there is something going on to try to help some shops and stuff. Matter of fact, the book publisher Abrams announced that they'll raise $100,000 for the fund. So, again, Google Book Industry Charitable Foundation, or if you're going to the eBays, Chunky Monkey with 40s. And if you win some Jim Lee, let us know. We'd love to take a look at it.
And, again, your local comic shop, ask them if they are doing mail. I know Hot Comics Jordan has announced they are doing delivery.
I think I would do that if I had a comic shop.
They are bringing the comics to you. They're the only shop that I really looked at because I did not have a whole lot of time. I know that DCB Service, which we use, is going to be putting out a bunch of stuff on their Available Now.
They did that Friday.
Okay.
Friday for us would be a week and a half from you guys, because that's what I did Friday afternoon as I ran through their in-stock stuff and was checking things out, see what kind of things I could find. Did not go through Marvel DC because they had a lot of stuff. So I do plan to revisit it. But I just kind of went through and looked for different things I may have missed. A lot of Steve Ditko comics, the things he self-published.
Yes.
I just figured, you know what? The ones I have, I've lost. So I just ordered one of everything. And I figured, you know, I'll read through them, and if I find out I remember them or I have them, I'll just put them on the old eBays. So,
And you'll notice that the older he got, the more they just became essays.
I don't even know that because they were under three different areas. Mr. A, hang on a second. Let's see if I can find my list here. Oh, stuff I bought. Here it is. A Ditko is one of them. And then Ditko Continued, Ditko Package, Ditko Presents. He did one Down Memory Lane. Mr. A, there were a few of them in there. And they weren't sequential. So it was like Mr. A, I got number 7, number 24, number 18. Steve Ditko's 30-page package, which I believe I've had before. And there were some other things too. But I figure for the price they were offering them and the fact that I've never seen these, And I admit that the few I've had that I read, I believe I had like number 20 at one time. And I couldn't make heads or tails out of it. I remember we talked about it at a podcast long past, but the art was fun to look at. So even if I can't understand where his mind was at the time, I'm looking forward just to looking at some of the art. And like I said, if I find out I do have them down in what's left of my vast accumulation of stuff, I'll put them on eBay's and I'll tell you about it before I do it. I did notice that I did when we talked last week, had Diamond Comics stopped?
Yes.
Vendors. And I have seen. Oh, I don't know how to. I'm just gonna say I've seen a lot of Diamond hate being pushed out there, where people are shocked that Diamond would do this, as if losing 56% of their business would allow them to still pay off their employees or pay off their vendors and keep the pipeline going, even though DC Comics printer shut down, Marvel's pushing plans out. You went through the whole list last week of publishers that are actually doing something versus things we don't know about. And I think a lot of this, like most people, the hate is misdirected because people just don't realize if it wasn't for Diamond Comics, we wouldn't be here where we are now, the pandemic notwithstanding, because they, in my opinion, single-handedly saved the comic industry. And I will back that up we'll visit those heady days of the 90s. But before we get there, I believe we need to do a little history of just how crappy comic distribution was leading up to those heady days of then. And for the best person to do that, I'll throw it to my partner here. Tell him, Strode.
Magazine distribution has always been pretty much a mess.
Mafia orientated.
That was part of it, but even before then, Joe, have you ever heard the phrase dime novel?
Yes.
What they were these cheap paperback, almost magazine size, more like the digest size magazines. And the companies would publish them, and then there would be distributors all over the U.S., Usually, they would go to this distributor, and then this distributor might send them out to these stores in different areas of the country. And more often than not, some of your bigger publishers were also the distributors. The one that everybody knows was National Periodicals, which was DC Comics. They had a shady beginning in the 30s, as did most magazine publishers in the 30s. I think I've talked in the past, but I'll go over it again. Martin Goodman did not start with comics. He started with pulp magazines. And during the 30s, he was brought into court repeatedly for passing off reprints as new stuff, which had happened so often in the 20s that there were laws against it in New York, which is where he was headquartered. And even back when it was just the pulp magazines, he would look at whatever trend was hot and put out a ton of stuff on it. And then rather than buy new work, which was more expensive, he would reprint stuff, change the name, change the author, have a different cover on it, and do that. And he got pulled into court repeatedly for that.
So is this a case where it was cheaper?
In the 40s, magazine distribution and pulps and everything kind of exploded in a way because people needed entertainment. They needed stuff to do and read. And there was also the distribution through PXs. And a lot of comics, if you look at comics in the 40s, you'll see a lot of patriotic stuff. Part of it was because America was all, let's go fight the Nazis. But the other part of it was so many of these were sold to soldiers who were deployed overseas. and just wanted something cheap to read. So when they came back, you'll notice the superheroes died away, and that's when you got the crime comics. And crime comics became huge because these soldiers who'd been reading comics during World War II came back, and they wanted something more to what they were interested in. And the publishers, a lot of them had started basically in the 30s. Okay, it costs more to shut the presses down and start them up again than to keep them running all night. So most of them would print comics overnight. You know, 64 pages for a dime was a profit center, made money. You could ship them out. There were newsstands everywhere. The distributors would take a hunk. They would then give it to the stores. And if you remember, have you ever seen a comic with the top third of the cover ripped off, Joe?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, matter of fact, a few of our listeners will get a few magazines like that because, you know, how I tend to slip things into my eBay sales. I had a couple that I was like, I kept them just to read, but I thought, you know, they might get a kick out of those. But yeah, you rip the cover off, usually just the logo, and you return it for credit, and the credit goes on to whatever the next thing you order is.
And the way it worked, especially with comics and paperback books, you rip off the cover.
If you ever see some of them actually say, if you bought this without a cover, it's an illegal copy, please report it to blah, blah, blah.
Yep. Because what it is, they would return those covers to the publisher and to prove that it didn't sell. Now, because a lot of these distributors were not exactly on the up and up, you could actually go places that would have comics with the top third cut off, and it's so. Okay, when I was a kid, they were 15 cents each rather than a quarter. But DC was one of the publishers. Independent News was one of the distributors. There were a bunch of distributors. Well, what happened in 1956 is Independent News. Was it Independent News or American? I have to look that up. Let me take a look here.
All right, we'll take a quick break.
Okay, it was either Independent News or American News, and I'll put whichever one it was in the quotes because it's hard to just pull up. But they got bought by a company and was the number one distributor for magazines. Jack Kirby and Simon and Kirby had signed an agreement with them for their company, Mainline Comics. Martin Goodman, who had been distributing things through his distribution company, Atlas, actually was offered a deal to distribute everything through them. Now, if you look on the 50s comics, the Timely comics, they had Atlas on the cover. But if you look inside, it was one of Martin Goodman's bajillions of companies that he used to evade taxes. But everybody who worked there still called it Timely. Atlas was the distributor. And if you look on EC Comics, you'll see it was Independent News because EC had IND for Independent News. So all of these magazines and books, paperback books and comics, were distributed in 1956. The company that had bought them took a look and said, you know, we would make more money selling the land these warehouses are on than we would make distributing magazines over the next year. Never mind the fact that they could distribute the magazines and make more money year to year to year to year to year, and it was ongoing, rather than if you sell the land, you get money once. They just looked at it and, oh, we will make more money this year selling the land these warehouses are on than we will distributing magazines for this year. Well, we need to show that we made more profit this year than last year. They sold all their warehouse, sold the land all the warehouses was on, got added distribution. This destroyed magazine and book companies up and down the line. You will hear people talk about how the Comics Code is what killed comics. No. The Comics Code didn't help, but it was their way of saying, okay, don't come after us. And there were a lot of companies that were so fly-by-night that it's, we don't want to deal with being in the Comics Code. We'll just shut down. Or sales had dropped to the point where it was just too much. But for companies like Atlas, and Fawcett and others, it was their distribution was gone. That's why Marvel had to sign that deal with DC, so that DC would distribute Marvel, but only allow 8 books. And the thing was, these national periodicals, they didn't want the comics. They wanted Martin Goodman's dirty magazines called Men's Sweat Magazines. And if you look out on the internet, just type in Men's Sweat Magazines and you'll see the covers. They're all, you know, He-Men saving women from wild animals and stuff. And it was, you know, stories like that of men, you know, big, burly He-Men saving women from danger. And
He-Man.
Then women in scanty clothing or less. Which,
you're out there, women folk never wear scanty costumes around wild animals unless a He-Man is nearby.
Exactly. Now, Joe, you probably know of the Frank Zappa album, Weasels Rip My Flesh.
Yes.
That is actually based on a cover from a Martin Goodman's Men's Sweat magazine.
Did not know that.
And it's a man fighting off weasels with a woman in a torn bikini behind him. So this killed tons and tons and tons of magazines and paperback book distributors and stuff, to the point where Playboy had started doing other magazines, including one called Trump, which was edited by... Does Joe know?
Harvey Kurtzman.
Damn right. You have.
Hey, I got one. I'll take a drink of that.
Killed it. Killed that magazine. Killed Hollywood Confidential. Killed all these magazines and stuff. And magazine distribution contracted. It wasn't until 68 that Marvel sales were so good they were able to cut a deal with a different distributor, which is why all of a sudden – in 1968, Marvel split up. Hulk and Submariner into their own books. Doctor Strange and Nick Fury into their own books. Captain America and Iron Man into their own books. All publishing all these new number ones and stuff because they got a distribution deal and could publish however many they want. By the 70s, magazine distribution was barely limping along. The idea of the newsstand was dying. I remember in Canton, Illinois, they had an old-fashioned newsstand, and they had this like wooden box where they would have one comic on the front, and if you picked it up, there would be other comics, there would be more of the same comic behind it. They had racks for magazines, and the magazines that men like, you know the ones, they were on a rack right next to the register so that the clerk could make sure that you were old enough to look through them and buy them. But sales on comics were dropping because two reasons. One, comics were going up in price, but they weren't going up in price the way magazines were. So grocery stores and gas stations and stuff would go, now I can put this 25-cent comic here, make more profit. Well, of course, the magazine that's a dollar, which is going to make more money. And they were losing rack space so fast that DC was in horrible trouble because they still thought it was the 60s and they were still printing, you know, 750,000 copies of Superman. And it would sell 225 to 300,000 copies. And if you said, even into the 80s and 90s, oh, it sells 300,000 copies, people go, oh, wow. But DC was printing 750,000 copies. So they were literally, in some cases, printing 3 to sell 1. And the rest would have the top third of their cover torn off. And for all the talk about how paper costs went up, it was more that they had to print more books that weren't selling. So in the 70s, Phil Suling had one of the earliest comic shops. And he was dealing with the fact that, you know, he didn't know if he could get everything from his local distributor anymore. And they were really pushing him to stock magazines instead of comics. because, hey, even for the distributor, that $1.50 Playboy is going to make them a hell of a lot more money than a 25-cent comic. Suling, however, was a big comic fan. He had a comic shop. So he went to DC and said, here's what I'd like to do. I'd like to buy direct from you. Not through a distributor, just direct from you. You print them, I take them. And from what I have read, DC hemmed and hawed, and at first they did what DC always did. No, we can't do that. Because you get to any big company, especially one like DC, which was run like an insurance company back in the 60s and 70s, and you say, hey, I've got this brand new idea, the first thing they're going to say is no.
No.
We can't do it. Why? Because we've never done it before.
Someone could get hurt.
Well, it's more, you know, and I run into this with every job I have. And Joe, you probably have too. Why do we do that? Because we've always done it that way. Well, Phil wouldn't take no for an answer, and he kept on him and kept on him and kept on him and kept on him until finally he was able to work out a deal where he would buy a certain dollar amount of books from them, and he would keep them. He wouldn't return them because DC was mostly dealing with the fact that their stuff was being returned, and they would have to pay that money. Basically, they would print stuff, and they would only get paid for some of it. And with some of the distributors, they were returning more. They were returning so much that DC literally wasn't getting paid by them. It's like, okay, here's the new books. We made this much money. You need to pay us this much. Well, here's the returns for next month. And if you think I'm joking, look at the history of TSR, the company that published Dungeons & Dragons. Returns killed them. Because they were selling their paperback books through Barnes & Noble and Borders. And there was a year where they didn't sell all that well during November and December. Books just didn't do all that well. So what Borders and Barnes & Noble did is anything that can be returned, return it. So TSR, who's counting on, hey, Christmas, we're going to make a lot of money. Nope. They got all this stuff back and for credit. Oh, well, we didn't make any of the money we were supposed to during our 2 months of the year where we finally start making a profit. They were gone. Wizards of the Coast, the creators of Magic, bought them. So it still goes on. But anyway, in the 70s, Phil Suling put together a deal. He called it Seagate Distribution, I believe.
Yeah.
And he went to other comic shops in the early era and went, tell you what, DC's going to sell me their books direct. Would you like in on this? I will sell you the books. And he would make like maybe a penny or two per book. Then there was somebody out on the West Coast who started doing the same thing, and they put together a deal with Marvel. And then they put together a deal with Carlton. They put together a deal with all the publishers at the time. So that by the time you got to the 90, to the end of the 70s, you had a direct market, which is these were comics. They didn't go through regular distribution. They were bought directly from the publisher. And then all of these little distributors had set up deals with the publishers, and it was based on how many books they would get. So Phil Suling, who got the most, would get the best deal, while Friendly Franks and Distribution out had to do that as well. You had all of these little distributors. And some of the distributors by the early 80s started publishing their own comics. Joe, when I mention Pacific, you probably think of Pacific Comics, not Pacific Comics Distribution.
True.
Because they put together a deal with Jack Kirby for Jack Kirby's new comic. And then they had other books. Capital City started publishing. They did Nexus and Badger. No, I think they just did Nexus and I know they did Nexus. I think they did a second book. It might have been Whisper, but I'm not 100% sure.
I think you're correct.
which is why they got picked up by First, because they were in Wisconsin and First was in Chicago. And a lot of the people involved in First Comics were also involved in the Chicago Comic-Con back then, when the Chicago Comic-Con was a huge deal. But Capital got out of it because they were growing as a distributor, and they kind of were nudged by Marvel and DC saying, hey, don't be our competition if you want to be our distributor.
Now, do you know when I started buying comics, and again, this was probably around 78, 79, I used to use Advance Comics to pre-order. That's how Pat and I started our journey to become comic retailers. We would
It wouldn't have been together. In 78 or 79 when Advance Comics was out.
Because that's what I read. That was the first distributor catalog I was exposed
yep.
to. Other
that
than
was
getting,
in the mid-80s.
Other than getting an occasional like Heroes World catalog, which I didn't realize was a distributor catalog. I thought it was like a Sears catalog. Oh, look at all the fun stuff I can order whenever I want. No, it was dated. Now that I look back and I see some of them. Was it like Superhero and whatever?
Yep, they had Superhero catalog, which was them selling, you know, all the merchandise. But they also had a Heroes World catalog where you could order comics.
And I do remember ordering through Bud Grant as yep. well.
Bud Plant.
Plant. Yeah, Bud Grant. Sorry, that's the coach, the best coach of the Minnesota Vikings ever.
But Plant got out of comics and got into art books. But by the mid-80s, you know, you had all these things. I think the shop that I went to, until I left them, they used Friendly Franks. And then something horrible happened in 85 and 86. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why do I say that that was a horrible thing that happened? Let's see if Joe remembers the black and white boom and bust.
I do.
Now,
I may not
were
remember
you
it.
At the point where you knew distributors back then?
No, because the only thing that we ordered through was Advance Comics. And occasionally the Comic Buyer's Guide. We'd do deals like that. There were people that we knew. I wish I could remember his name. Gruber used to call him the Throat. He was a really, really young kid, very thin, hence the pronounced throat. And if you're listening, give me a call so I could give you credit. We used to order stuff directly from him, and he would show up, and he had bundles shrink wrap. So the last one I remember buying was Penguin Samurai, which was towards the end of the collapse. You know, 10 copies, which we're selling for crazy money. Crazy money.
Now you can probably get them for a dime each.
If you could find them in a dime box. The reason I had asked earlier about who was probably bigger, Diamond or Cap, because St. Paul was always a Cap City town. We had an actual warehouse here that they would truck comics to, and then the retailers would get them from. That's why Diamond never made an inroad here or places like Friendly Franks. They might be secondary, but they were never main, because with an actual warehouse here, and again, their main warehouse was in Madison, Wisconsin, so it wasn't a big deal to drive up. That was why this was always a capital city town. So for anyone else to come in, I mean, people, the big thing that we were told constantly is Diamond Comics would come up and say, what would it take for you to buy more from us? And, well, if you had a warehouse in town. But they'd never get a warehouse because, and now we'll ask to see, does Strode know? Ask
Shinders,
Strode.
Shinders used Cap City. The other thing was Diamond was pretty much the East Coast. Cap City was one of the bigger ones in the Midwest. The reason it kind of became just them was the collapse of 85-86. What happened was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles came out in 1984. They were smart, and they just sent out a press release. And it got in newspapers because, hey, you send a press release, as long as it looks professional and there's not a lot going on, you're going to get printed in the paper. They were in the Peoria Journal Star. They were in the Galesburg newspaper. you know, about this new comic. Never mind that there were only 3,000 being printed because that's all they could afford to print. They sent out this press release. The book came out and was immediately red hot because dealer comic shops weren't able to get all of their order. And people had read this press release. Oh, I want this book. So
now remember, this is way before the internet, way before the eBays, way before anything. So if a book was hot.
It's before Dark Knight. It's before Dark Knight. It's before Watchmen. It's before the mainstream paid attention.
You bought it for what your comic shop sold it for, which is why I ended up buying a copy of Fish Police for $35 because they were the only store in town that had it. And it was on the coattails of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles because suddenly anybody who could publish a black and white comic, that was like printing money. The closest I can think of would be like Days of Magic. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So you had all the Ninja Turtle parodies come out and then parodies of parodies and then parody comics out the ass. Samurai Penguin was the first comic published by Slave Labor, who went on to publish stuff like Gloom Cookie and Jomny the Homicidal Maniac and Milk and Cheese, but they started as one of those. Now, the problem was these books were being hyped in Comic Buyer's Guide, which was the only way you could buy, you know, back issues, not from a store. These books were being hyped before they came out. There were ads for these books for, you know, they're $1.50, but hey, it hasn't even come out yet, and it's already worth $10, already worth $15, already worth $20. And what happened was all of the smaller distributors smelled this money, so they would order heavy on these books, no matter what the stores had ordered. Or in some cases, the store ordered. Okay, we got all our orders in from all of our stores, and they want 400 copies of this. Well, we better order 4,000 because it's going to get hot. And then when the stores come to us, we can sell it to them for double cover price or triple cover price. The distributors were actually speculating because at this point, most of the distributors had either started as stores or dealers. Well, eventually the bubble will burst. And the bubble burst. All of a sudden, these books all look like shit. They were unreadable. And eventually, if there's no investment property for them, people aren't going to buy them. So kid buys pre-teen, dirty jean, gangrene, jujitsu gerbils.
Hey, to be fair, the first issue had a rare but consequential appearance by one of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
But he bought it, and then a month later takes it back to the store to sell it. And the store goes, I don't want it. But you've got it up there, and it's for sale for $20. Yeah, but I got a whole bunch of them. Oh, it's not worth anything? He's not going to buy the next issue. May not even buy any more comics. And that happened so fast. Stores were stuck with inventory they couldn't sell, so they couldn't pay their distributor. Distributors had purchased nobody wanted. They had extended themselves to invest in this stuff, and all of a sudden the market goes away. So all of a sudden, comic shops, hey, where are my new comics? We couldn't pay our bill to Marvel. We couldn't pay our bill to DC. We couldn't pay our bill to this company or that company or the other. So the smaller publishing companies, they're gone. The distributors, they don't have comics to sell. They're gone. So the stores that are left have to scramble to find a distributor. Okay, where can I get books from? The local shop where I was at, when their distributor went down, he actually had to drive to a distributor in the Quad Cities. And he got maybe half of the stuff that he needed for subscribers. And it wasn't for another 2 months that he was able to get set up with the distributor because you're ordering books 3 months in advance. So you go to Cap City and say, hey, I'd like to order books and I need this week's books. They're going to go, sorry, dude, those orders are done. You can order for stuff that's coming out in a couple of months. So that was the collapse that happened in the late 80s. And what came out of it was, well, Marvel and DC and First and other companies, those still sell. But all these black and white books and all the smaller distributors that had been kind of based around, well, I'm a shop and I've got money so I can distribute, they were gone too. So you had a new paradigm where there were, I think, 7 distributors. And don't quote me on that. I just remember hearing there were 7 distributors. I know there was Diamond, Cap City, Cold Cut, Heroes World, Rip Off Press. Was it Rip Off?
Yeah, they were their own distributors.
No, it was Last Gasp. Last Gasp. And Rip Off was sold through Last Gasp.
Yep.
And there were 2 others, but I don't remember who they were. And they limped into the 90s when all of a sudden sales started going up again because Marvel and DC were, oh, these books are worth money. And money started pouring in, partly from the Batman movie. I cannot tell you. I worked at Schindler's in 89. I cannot tell you how much money we made off Batman. Oh, my God. No matter what Batman comic came in, it was gone later that day. We couldn't order enough. X-Men was selling through the roof and climbing every month. And then you got all these hot artists, and then Wizard came in, and everybody bought Wizard because, oh, Wizard said this book's going to be worth a lot of money, so I'm going to go through the back issues and buy them up. And that ramped up until we got to where Joe knows about. We had a distributor war.
Oh, yeah. Marvel, so when I had all these hot comics, we bought, as I mentioned before, through Cap City, because that was pretty much the biggest distributor, the only distributor in town. We didn't pay shipping costs. That's a key thing. Remember when we get to that, because they would truck it up to us and we would go pick it up. He had some issues available for sale. So if you knew like a certain issue was hot, you could pick them up. He had comic books and supplies. So we got those cheap. Diamond wouldn't come to town unless Schindler's bought from them, and Schindler's wouldn't because they could get a sweet deal through Cap. And again, I talk about how one of the hot comics guy, Dan Wiesemeyer, had the foresight to order through Diamond Comics the Death of Superman comic, the black bagged one, as well as some of the newsstand one. Because what had happened is when that hit, it sold so fast and so furious, everybody was out by the weekend. And then all of a sudden we get this huge reorder, Hot Comics. And again, at the time it was just St. Paul, because Dan and Brian hadn't opened up Hot Comics Edina yet. We were the only shop that had the Death of Superman issue for cover price, which was huge. Dan and Brian were able to take 50 copies off that reorder, put it in the storefront for the time it took them to open right before Christmas, and it drove people crazy because they go by and go, hey, I know that issue. We got to come back to that. So that's how you would buy through Diamond Comics, knowing if you needed reorders. It wasn't – they couldn't get it to you fast enough in order to get it out on the shelf to be competitive with all the other comic shops and Schindler's. So that was pretty much us going – starting in the 90s going forward. Now, as we continued, and I want to make sure I get the timing right, Marvel Comics was bought by Ron Perlman. No, not the guy who played Hellboy. This was a, how would you describe him? He was a venture capitalist. He would buy and gut them.
Yeah, basically, he was one of these guys in the 80s and 90s who would buy a company and then strip it of all its worth and sell off the pieces. And the reason he was able to do that was because Marvel had gone public. Marvel was selling shares. And he kind of did a leverage buyout. and then started stripping Marvel for parts.
Yeah.
When he Marvel basically was took tons of money.
He took all the characters, put them in a one part of the corporation. He gave himself preferred. He sold off preferred stock, of which he kept the majority of. So even though you might get a piece of the action, you never had enough that you could be able to vote and have him change how things were run. They bought Toy Biz. They bought Panini, an Italian card distributor. They bought Skybox. Fleer.
They bought Fleer, which was a huge baseball card company during the year of the baseball card strike.
Now, the reason
not
they
the
bought
baseball card strike, the baseball strike, I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, and what the reason they bought these was because at the time, comic book cards were hot. I mean, Gruber and I, when that Jim Lee X-Men came out, we bought literally four cases. We had people that wanted sets. We had people that wanted boxes unsealed. You were going after Chase cards. You were going after Super Chase cards. Walmart had an exclusive set of their own Chase cards. And we went to Sam's Club and bought a box. So things were hot. Toys were hot. So they bought these companies at maximum value. And then things started to go south. And one of the big things that Marvel did that, and I can't emphasize how badly this screwed up. This is basically, how would you say it? This is the linchpin. This is what made the dam break. Marvel Comics bought Heroes World. Corey, tell them what Heroes World was.
Okay, Heroes World was a small distributor of comics in the in the New York region.
Yeah.
Now, as all this is going on, the comic boom has busted. Image is putting out books that people are ordering for huge numbers, but when they come out, they're not selling as much. Marvel sales are dropping, and they're dropping so fast that comic shops can't cut their orders fast enough. So comic shops would order 300 of this book. And by the time it came out, the interest had dropped so far that they were only able to sell 50. So they're left with 250 of this book on the shelf, and they're cutting their orders as fast as they can. And in some cases, they're ordering a book that they had, 400 people want this book. And then when it comes out 6 to 9 months later, 40 people want it. People are leaving the comics world, but also prices had got to the point, and I don't think this is emphasized enough. I remember when I worked at Schindler's, there were tons of people who would buy one to read and one to bag. I mean, that was a part of comics you don't hear about anymore. X-Men, we sold most people bought two copies, one to read and one to bag. Well, when comics got to $1.50, $2, people, I'm just going to buy one.
So think of this. We went from the death of Superman, the rise of Image, the breaking of Batman's back, X-Men phenomena from the cartoon, December 93. On December 28th, 1994, Heroes World was bought by Marvel Comics to act as the company's exclusive distributor, thus reducing market share by almost a third to all the other distributors. And this didn't happen. We saw it coming. This happened July 1995. So we had 5 months watching this coming. What happened was it set off a crazy round of people deciding, publishers, we're going exclusive with Diamond. We're going exclusive with Cap City. Because, again, Heroes World is just doing Marvel Comics. And the sad thing was that Diamond got the majority of the publishers. They got Image. It was to the point where I believe Top Cow left Image because they didn't want to support the idea that all our books are going through one distributor.
That's not why they left Image.
Well, that what ended up, and again, I'm talking from where I saw at the retailer, because the retailer standpoint, I could buy them through Cap.
I can tell you why Top Cow left Image.
Hey, why not? We do sidebars all the time.
Joe, do you remember Rob Liefeld?
That's me. No, I don't.
He and Mark Silvestri, by this point, hated each other. Hated each other. And Silvestri thought that Liefeld's business practices were destroying the comics industry. So they had a meeting, and Silvestri said, you have to put your books out on time, and you have to cut down the number of titles you're doing. And Rob Liefeld said, screw you, I can do what I want. And Silvestri said, well, then I don't want to be a part of Image anymore because you're destroying Image as a brand. He left Image. Now, he later went back to Image, but it was more about the battle they had with Liefeld. And if you look at the history, when Liefeld was finally booted from Image, it wasn't that long after that Mark Silvestri came back to Image. So you could actually be more about that.
What was the name of that crossover they were doing? Was it there's a crossover where that happens, where at the end they're like, the guys from Top Cow are, goodbye, we'll see you guys later. What? You're leaving? Yes. And then at the end of it, pop, hey guys, we're back. So it's in one of the comics, and I wish I could remember.
I never read those things, but that's what happened. And you can you can find out more about it in that book from Tomorrow's about the history of Image.
Now here's what happened at the retailer level. All of a sudden, my operating cost remained pretty much the same. But now I have three distributors to buy from. And again, I tried to buy as much as I could through Cap because I felt that they were getting a raw deal because everybody was going with Diamond. Dark Horse went with Diamond. You name it, Joe Schmo, little guy, went with Diamond. A few went exclusively with Cap, but not enough to keep them going. So now instead of just dealing with one distributor for everything, I'm now dealing with three. And something else happened too. Remember how I was talking about earlier? I could just go to Cap City, pick up what I needed. Couldn't do that anymore. Everything had to be shipped to me. This led to me doing, and other comic retailers doing, ridiculous things to try to get things first, or at least get them so that I could open up. We had one advantage over Schindler's that Schindler's did not care. Schindler's would get their books, they go downtown, they distribute them out. So I had about 24 hours every time books would hit before Schindler's would even get the books. It didn't really matter because if you were a Schindler's kid, you probably weren't even aware that there were other comic shops around. But if you were a comic guy, you would know, hey, now, and this worked to Gruber and my advantage too, where if we notice, hey, Batman 89 sold out really hot, I'll run to Schindler's and get their copies. Because a lot of times, unless the guy running that Schindler's knew what the hell was going on, he may not realize that. So I could walk in and maybe pick up a few copies off the shelf. If they did, they would probably already in the back issue and for $10. So my costs increased, my time increased by three ordering stuff. Time is money. Now I'm paying shipping to three different distributors because the local Cap City warehouse closed. They could no longer afford it. The other thing that happened, remember what we were talking about, although Heroes World was the third largest comic distributor, they were pretty small. And
it's a lot like how it used to be during the Cold War. China had the third largest number of nuclear weapons. Well, the U.S. had a huge number. Oh, here's a better one. Iraq had the third largest army in the world during the first Gulf War. Well, there's the U.S. way up here, and there's Russia way up here, and then a huge drop-off to Iraq, which is why we were able to go in and pretty much just beat them in a weekend.
Yeah.
And it was the same for comics. You had Cap City, which took over most of the Midwest, Diamond, which had most of the East Coast and West Coast, and then way down was Heroes World, which had the New England.
Now, the most
into the reason why everybody was scrambling to go exclusive. With Marvel gone and comic sales dropping, there simply wasn't going to be enough money to go around. Just like in 86, 87, all these little distributors went away. This was going to happen, but on a bigger scale.
And there was one lone voice in the wilderness calling for reason. And do you remember who that was?
Oh, yeah, that was Tilting at Windmills.
Oh, yeah, well, him. But I was even thinking David Sim was talking about that.
Oh, yeah.
Because he talked about how when he first started, he had a single distributorship with, I believe, Friendly Franks.
Yes.
And then when, for whatever reason, Friendly Franks disappeared, he suddenly opened up to all distributors, and his sales doubled, if not tripled. Maybe quadrupled. I don't know. He just said, there's no reason to have all your stuff in a single pipeline. But no one's going to listen to them because of the reasoning that Corey was saying. People were contracting. The comic industry was contracting. I think people were in a blind panic.
And everybody was so worried. This is something that isn't talked about much. When DC went with Diamond, they weren't being distributed by Diamond anymore. Diamond was the agent to sell directly to stores. And in that new deal, DC could at any time step in and take over Diamond. Because DC was worried, well, if Diamond goes under, we have no way to get our stuff to stores. It was a 10-year clause because Steve... But DC wanted that clause in there in case Diamond went under, they could step in, take over, and their books could still get to stores. So everybody
Let's go back.
Oh, crap.
I'm gonna go back to the whole thing I was saying about Heroes World being small. They lacked the infrastructure to handle Marvel's huge weekly orders. I don't think I had many, but I know if I were to go back, there were extensive, probably shipment and billing mistakes, errors. Oh, yeah. I mean, I would get, it was amazing. I mean, it wouldn't be, I think you saw it at one time. Any one week, I had to pay off 6 different invoices to Heroes World because of misbillings or mistakes. Whereas with Cap City and Diamond, I had one. And if there was a mistake, it would follow in the following weeks. And it got to the point where it was so bad. I'll tell you, when it would became, I mean, Heroes World, oh, I've got the number right here. Well, how long did they last? Throughout 95, 96, they floundered. There were lawsuits. There were business. I didn't do anything. I just kept ordering. And in 97, when they went under, it got to the point where I just stopped. I stopped paying Heroes World because I could never know if they'd get payment, and if they did, if it would be correct. I was getting mistakes in my orders. I mean, when I'm missing half my X-Men order, and we've talked about it in the past, you're talking that's 100-plus comics. I gauge all the other comics by how X-Men sells, and I'm not getting any relief. I'm not getting – I mean, I was covered – for subscribers, because again, we had 3 hot comics. So if I had need be, I could call the other 2 and say, hey, could you give me enough to just cover subscribers? I just stopped paying them. Now, Cap went out of business, and I'm trying to figure out their, hang on a second, when their last.
What happened with Cap was they weren't able to get enough publishers in order to make a go of it. And here's the weird thing. You and I were at the last Cap City conference when I think it was Image announced that they were going with Diamond. Mm-hmm. And they announced it the second day of the Cap City Conference. So the first day, you know, people were kind of happy and everything. And then the second day, it was like you're walking
through. It was gone. Cap City sued Marvel for the loss of their business, resulting in a settlement. They got to distribute comics through October 95. When the exclusive war started, Cap City signed Kitchen Sink Press, TSR, Viz Comics. Yeah, probably nobody you even know of any today.
And somebody who made
they did acquire
prints that I'd never heard of before.
Yeah, they did acquire Friendly Franks. So that was the end of Friendly Franks. But by 96, it was over. Bankruptcy or selling out. 96, Cap City was acquired by Diamond Comics, July in 1996. Cap had over $150 million in sales. Nobody knows the purchase price, but you're talking it was like $150 million in sales revenue to Diamond right away. Effectively awarded Diamond Comics complete control of the comic distribution system, with the exception of Marvel.
There was also Cold Cut distribution.
And they did just
talk more about.
Yeah, Cold Cut was kind of cool because they just did black and white independence, which I was very strong on. So if I need, and they had them in stock. So if I needed, say, a refill of Lone Wolf and Cub, or again, Viz, or I don't know, give me a Distant Soil from Colleen Doran when she's publishing by herself.
Cerebus, you got the Cerebus books through them.
I could order anything I needed through them.
Last Gasp still distributed the Undergrounds.
Yep. Now, Heroes World, they limped along, and what killed them, the date, 1997, they went out of business. Marvel returned to Diamond Distributors, which made them, by default, the only major distributor left standing. Does Strode know what major black and white book went to a major publisher to protect itself during this time?
Bone.
Yep, Jeff Smith's Bone. That's why if you're looking at back issues of Bone, you suddenly see them published by Image, and then all of a sudden they stopped, and he went back to self-publishing. So I think we've covered it pretty good, although, Corey, if you got anything else you want to add, this is why Diamond Comics, the distributor, is not a bad guy. They single-handedly saved comic books. They not only took over Cap City's account, but they came and they said, Joe, we need to get this squared away. Fine. And they cut up what was left of Cap City and paid me. They did the same thing with Heroes World. All of a sudden, I was getting a Heroes World bill from Marvel, from Diamond. And as Diamond went through all of Heroes World crap, it was a full... In 1999, I swear, I was still getting bills for Heroes World shit that Diamond uncovered that Heroes World never figured out I owed him. And they were, again, that's why they were the only major distributor left standing. They single-handedly saved comic industry as we know it. Granted, if they hadn't have done the exclusive distributor war, maybe, I don't know, judging by everything I read, sooner or later, Cap City or Diamond Comics would have just gone out of business because they lost 35 to 40% of their sales from Marvel.
Yeah.
I don't think either one could have survived. Because distributing is very narrow. There's a couple of things I want to point out back, and one of them Corey alluded to. Diamond Comics was not distributing DC or Marvel. They were acting as their agent. And I don't know what the terms were. Is it they were getting paid per book?
Yes.
But
it is, Diamond was never... The way comics distribution worked way back with Seagate, he bought those books from DC and Marvel and Carlton. They were his. If he didn't want to send them to anybody, he didn't have to. They were his.
And if he didn't want to buy them in the first place, he didn't have to. There's a lot of people complaining about how Diamond refused to carry XYZ book because it didn't meet their whatever sales, which to me, I didn't care. I just would go buy it from Cold Cut. But not everybody did that. And that means a lot of money to you if you're trying to sell this book and suddenly the largest distributor doesn't want to carry it. Or worse, you were carrying it and they decided not to anymore.
But with the new terms, Diamond never takes actual possession of these comics. It's not all the shops order, they calculate the orders, they say to DC, hey, we want to buy X number of books from you. They calculate it up, give it to DC, and DC says, okay, you have orders for this many. They will send them those books, and then a certain percentage for what they call spoilage, for books that get damaged or whatever. Diamond never owns those books. They aren't Diamond's books.
From a retailer standpoint, what that means is that the discount from Diamond is different from the discount of Marvel. Marvel always had a better discount, whereas Diamond was usually a couple percentage points off, which could mean a lot depending on how big your store was. And again, Hot Comics was a big store. It made a difference to us. God knows what it meant to Shinders. I mean, how many stores? 13? 18?
13. Yeah, 13 at their peak.
And what it also is interesting is that the terms of buying comics changed a little. It didn't affect me when I tried to do Crazy Comics, but what would happen is you had to order $500 of Diamond or of DC Comics, $500 of Marvel, not to mention anything else that Diamond had. And it was just your discount would go up or down. One month I would get 50% from Diamond. I'm saying it wrong. 50% from DC. And then all of a sudden I would get like 48%. What happened? Well, you missed a discount for that. I'm not even looking at that. I'm looking at total discount. They also did a carrot thing where Marvel might come and say, you know, if you reorder this X-Men comic, we'll give you an extra 5% off your entire order of X-Men comics. It also led to really bizarre. If you order X amount of this based on your order of that versus what you reordered of that book, we will give you a piece of candy. It was just crazy. Candy. And, you know, Brian Hibbs railed against us because it was like you could never be sure how you'd be planning month after month because your discounts could go up or down. The other thing that happened is that, you know, Independence, where I used to be able to get a 40% discount, suddenly went to 35. That's when I discovered I got a better deal through Cold Cut. And again, this is all taking up time. Look how long it took me to describe it to you. I went from basically one book, one distributor, one discount to other discounts. And I believe me, it got hard when I started to tell people, like some of my best guys would come in and I swear it was easier for them to tell me, I don't want this, order me one of everything else. And I had to say, guys, I can't sell this to you at a 30% discount because I'm only getting 25 at it, but I will sell it to you at 25. So all of a sudden guys were getting books in their bin where it's like, okay, you're not getting your full 30% discount. Cause these are guys that like ordered 300, 400 comics a month from me. Not a lot, just a headache. No wonder I lost my hair by the end of the 90s. The other thing I wanted to point out is, again, we're talking smack, but Diamond was very conscientious of trying to keep the comic industry going. They did a wonderful, wonderful job of sucking up Cap City accounts and taking care of them. One thing Cap City did that I absolutely loved is they had an actual rep that would come through the Midwest and visit all the stores. Diamond never had that. And when Diamond bought Cap City, they allowed that guy, his name was Tim, to continue to visit us. And he loved me because he would come in and he would give me a pile of stuff and say, okay, this is what we want you to see if you want to reorder. I would just take that, run across the store and check off everything, you know, whereas some other people, you had to kind of like pull teeth. And that leads to, of course, the famous Rat Bastard Root Beer story, which I will attend to. Which is I would always sell Rat Bastard Root Beer depending on how my mood was. If it was, normally, what did I sell for? $1.50. If
yeah.
I had a bad day, it would be a buck. Well, one day I called Diamond Comics and I said, "Yeah, I'm missing some comics." "Oh, what are you missing?" "Everything past the letter D." "What?" Unfortunately, Tim decided that day to visit me. And I said, "Tim, sit down. Here's a Rat Bastard Ripper on the house." And I think it was Big Mike or Little Mike. They're like, "Ooh, you're in trouble now." Why? He only gives it away when he's angry. I didn't really get angry. I just wanted my problem solved. I know of other people in the Hot Comics chains that would literally yell at their accountant over the phone. I was like, whatever. So, yeah, I told Tim what happened. And, yeah. And the other thing I'll mention as my final note on this is Diamond several times saved my ass. I believe it was probably after the comic book boom started to collapse where I called him up and I said, "Hey, I'm having trouble here. I've got more than I need. What they allowed me to do is I took a certain amount of my orders, cut them up into payments and with interest tacked on, spread it out over the next 6 months. They did that for me right after 9/11. I remember calling them up and I said, "My business is gone." And the rep I talked with just kind of, you could hear her sigh saying, "Yeah, pretty much everything's going." I said, "What do you need to do?" I said, let's take these invoices, cut them up. And I had it. So the last time I owed him was the week before I sold the shop. And then I ended up paying him everything. Even when I closed Crazy Comics, I think I left. I had like $1,200 outstanding. And they came months later and said, "Well, you know what? 10%, your account's closed. We're over with." So Diamond, to me, treated me very fairly. I think I treated them fairly. And that's why when I hear people now bad-mouthing Diamond right now, it kind of got my dander up a bit. And, you know, it's like people that you don't necessarily understand. Diamond's probably, if this goes on much longer, Diamond's not long for this world. I have no idea. I don't, you know, DC, Marvel, they're owned by big corporations. Even if we never see another solid floppy comic book from them again, I don't think Time Warner or Disney are going to break a tear. Comic books are kind of a buttocks on the publishing end of the market. Just look at when Corey breaks into sales numbers. What's our best-selling comic book now outside of like an event comic, Corey?
Usually around 125,000. But here's the thing. Usually by the time you get to the 20th best-selling comic, you're talking 40,000.
And a best-selling comic in a nation of over 280 million, a best-selling book.
330 million.
Yes, 330 million, and it's barely 33 to 4 million copies to make the New York bestseller list. We're a pimple on the buttocks of the publishing industry. The only people who care anymore are us. And if we lose Diamond, I think we've pretty much lost the game. I know I hear things, Penguin might pick up, whatever. But folks, they are not the bad guy in this. If they cannot pay anybody, there's some serious shit going down.
One thing that I would like to toss in that has been bubbling up through all of this, over 50% of stores were into Diamond. That means Diamond was carrying them. They were on payment plans with Diamond. Half of comic stores were in debt to Diamond. And Diamond didn't do, you know, it used to be back in the 90s. "Oh, you can't pay? Forget it. No more books till you come, till your bill's paid."
And people
fact, try that, that with, on each try other. That with your landlord, yeah, or the electric company or the water company or yeah, anybody.
But see, in the 90s, you could get away with that because if you stiffed Cap, you just go to Diamond. If yeah, you stiffed Diamond, you go to Heroes World. Believe me, those guys, it caught up to them when everything got distributed down to one single distributor.
So that's the history of comics distribution. By the way, I have found the company was actually, let me see here, American News Company. So there's even more to it that's been discovered recently, by the way, Joe. They were ruled a virtual monopoly by the Justice Department and were told that they needed to kind of break up some of their distribution. And that's when they said, oh, well, our land is worth more than the distribution company, so we'll just dissolve the magazine publishing, sell the land.
That sounds like what Sears is doing.
Yeah. Well,
it's old, it's new.
Well, remember when DC got bought by Kinney? What does Joe know? What was Kinney's business when they bought both DC and Warner Brothers?
I don't have any clue.
Parking lots.
Oh.
They ran parking lots and used the money from that to buy those. And then by the late 60s, they sold off all the parking lots because they were making more money with all the stuff they'd bought. And that is now what is Time Warner, or just Warner. I think it's just Warner Communication now, but now it's owned by AT&T.
Yeah, believe me, I don't think AT&T cares about comic books.
So if you think all of this is confusing, I got something really simple for you right now, right here. You ready?
Oh, thank the gods.
It's these guys, our sponsors. Believe it or not, kids, this here podcast has sponsors. And that sponsor, since day one, is DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com is the best, bar none, web host in the whole known universe. And if you need a website, head on over to DreamHost.com, put in code CRAZY, that's K-R-A-Y-Z, and get $20 off your first year. Now, if you would like to advertise here on any of the Solitaire Rose Network podcasts, you can just email me at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, subject advertising. Also, head on over to eBay and look for user Crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z, that's Joe Crazy Writer, who's always telling us about the eBay in every episode of Crazy Comics and Stories. If you would like to contact us, you can do so. You can give us a call at 952-856-0519. Leave a message and we'll play it on the show. Or you can send us an email at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. Thanks. And if you were paying attention, last week you saw that I put up a new episode of Novelcast because with everybody stuck at home, I have promised to have two podcasts a week. Even though I'm working all the time, I'm working for you too, because I know that you're stuck at home. You want stuff to listen to. Matter of fact, here are all the podcasts that I do. The Solitaire Rose Podcast Network is filled with all kinds of audio goodness. First, there's Crazy Comics and Stories. It's been going since 2010. It drops every Monday, and it has me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard, and Joe Crazy Writer, talking comics, shenanigans, and whatever we're freaking and geeking about. Every Monday morning. It's been going since 2010, and it's available at crazycomics.solitairerose.com. Also on that same feed is the Solitaire Rose Podcast, which is me, again, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard, doing interviews, talking about comics history, pretty much talking about whatever I want to talk about. We've also got Solo Joe, where Joe Crazy Writer does a solo podcast, and he hasn't done one in a while, so kick him in the shins to get him started. We also, on that same feed, have Solitaire Rose Series and Review, where we do DVD commentary of older comic book series. That's all at crazycomics.solitairerose.com. I also do a podcast with Wolfie B. Bad at badadvice.solitairerose.com, where we take listener questions and give them bad advice. There's also Novelcast, where I take the novels I've written and turn them into free audiobooks. That's at novels.solitairerose.com. There's also Fantastic Forecast, where myself and Adam Vermillion are going through the entire run of the Fantastic Four four issues at a time. That's fantasticforecast.solitairerose.com. And if you think that I'm on all of these podcasts, you're wrong, because Scrabbling Across the West is at scrabbling.solitairerose.com, where musician Dave Coffell and his wife Stephanie travel across America and then sitting down to play Scrabble and talk about the day. That's at Scrabbling Across the West, scrabbling.solitairerose.com. There are always more podcasts at the Solitaire Rose Podcast Network. Be there. Aloha. And now it's time for Joe's favorite part of the show. No, 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 not where I order a burrito and eat it in front of him.
You know, that's funny because while we were talking, my kids just dropped me off a burrito I ordered. But no, I'll have to until after we're done, because we're coming up with my favorite part of the show.
Yeah, what's going on the eBays?
Lots.
Thanks. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone. No, I don't know if it's because things are slow. I do know it's because I did go through a lot of things and lower my price, which is always fun because, you know, it gives me a chance to blow out some older stuff and see what kind of things people are interested in. And there's no rhyme or reason to what people buy on eBay. So it's always fun to see something sell. What's even more fun is when, say, for example, did you know I sent a guy my giant size man thing and his wife is still loving it?
Ooh.
I know. Yep. Phil, and I suppose I'll try slaughtering your name. Cantonese. Actually, maybe I did get that right. He did a repeat buy for me and sent me a quick note saying, "Hey, Joe, still loving the podcast and the wife is still loving." Well, he said my giant size man thing. I'm pretty sure he meant it for me because he bought it for me a while back. Thanks much. And he bought something for me and I went and included a couple other things. And then Matt Whitaker came back, bought a couple more things. He apparently is going to try to buy all the WCW coloring books he can. And I happen to have two. That was one of the things I mentioned where I lowered the price on it. And I thought, hey, this is kind of cool. And he bought that, and he also bought a Scooby-Doo 158 that was signed by our buddy Terrence Creep, a.k.a. Spider Baby. I look around because he hates it when we reveal his identity. So I'm still putting lots of stuff up. I mean, I will be going back to work, but, you know, things are going fast and furious. You can always send me a note, especially if you do buy something, because I will toss in a couple extra fun things. And usually I try to make them relevant. So if you like order an Archie variant cover from me, I may toss in another Archie variant cover or something that I have sitting around. Or in a case of like with Matt, I sent in, I had a, I don't know if you remember when Krause did those, they jumped in on the pro wrestling craze at the end of the 90s and had their own magazine.
I don't remember that at all.
I don't remember what the name of it was because, again, I ripped the covers off and returned it from credit. But as I was going through crap and recycling it, I always kept one because I thought it'd be fun to read. And I have a bunch of them. I figured, you know, I'll toss one in for Matt and see if he enjoys it. So check it out. K-R-A-Y-Z. More stuff coming up all the time. Only one thing left to say. Come get some.
And now we get to my favorite part of the show. No, no, no. Not where I sit down and try to watch WrestleMania, even though it's basically being done in an empty warehouse somewhere. No, it's Freaking and Geeking. Joe, what are you freaking on?
I was freaking on the fact that, for some reason, Discount Comic Service did not send me a copy of Previews, and the fact that all the shops in town are closed, so I cannot get a copy of Previews. Although Corey did send me a link that you could get a free copy of Previews. And Corey, I'll have you, if you get a chance, toss it up on our Crazy Comics page. Because next week, we're going to go through a very special episode of our Previews preview. Why is it special? Well, I don't know if you can actually go through it and take our recommendations and actually order things from this Previews. Maybe you can, maybe you can't. If not, you can certainly take that particular Previews, put it aside, because as you know, we take all of our episodes on Crazy Comics and put, they're never behind a paywall. So if months from now, or hopefully just a few weeks, say Diamond Comics does reopen and starts placing orders again, you can then listen to our podcast at your leisure and listen to what we recommend and things like that. Or it might just be one of those episodes that nobody ever listens to because none of them books ever shipped again. And we, it could be the last time we dry hump a previews preview because we're previewing books that may never ship, may never be orderable, and may never be seen again. It's history in the making.
So but just think, Joe, it could be as fun as when you go back and read those Amazing Heroes previews issues for comics that never came out.
Yep. So history in the making, folks, and you can join along with the fun. If you didn't get a previews, like I said, we'll post the link to get the freebie. It's at Previews World Diamond Comics. You can actually get, as far as I can tell, the physical copy. The only thing that I find is a bummer about it is when you, it's very small. I'm using my laptop, so I've got a fairly big screen for a laptop, but it's really small print. So when you zoom it in, the print gets bigger, but it gets fuzzier because there's not a lot of resolution correction. Still enough to get through it, but I'm an old fart. I prefer sitting back with a glass of lemonade, beating the old kids while I got a previews in my lap, and I'm just writing in my notebook the books I want to read. But I did it anyways. I waddled through it. I did not get a copy of DC or Marvel's preview. However, if you go to Diamond's Previews World, they have them all listed, and they have them listed alphabetically. And they have the descriptions there, so you can click on it and get the description of what you're looking at. So that's about as good as you can get with the Marvels or the DC supplement. So next week when we talk about it, you'll notice I won't necessarily be talking in order. I'll be talking alphabetical because, you know, we always like to talk about comics and then the graphic novels, although I'm sure I can figure it out somehow. The reason it's not really a freaking, although I said, because I went and I looked, I forgot to actually order the previews. So my bad. Corey, what are you freaking on?
No new comics.
I guess comics. I'm not freaking on that because I got my box day last Friday, so I've got plenty to read.
Oh, I have plenty to read, but still, no new comics. No new movies. No new movies. It's starting to look like we may not have a fall TV season. It's weird how everything is ground to a halt. I tried watching WrestleMania, and I guess I just was not in the mood for it. Because after the first match, it's like, I can't. I can't watch this. It's, you know, these big matches they build up to in a warehouse with nobody around.
You know, and I will say I talked with Turbo a little bit today, our old buddy Eric Jackman, because he did watch the WrestleManias, and WrestleManias, because I guess it was Saturday and Sunday.
Yep, they did two nights, because, oh my God, could you imagine 8 hours in an empty arena?
He qualified it saying he enjoyed it for what it was.
Yeah.
So, and again, he told me the matches to watch and things like that, so I'll probably do that. Whenever I get around to it. I still haven't watched anything from last year, but we did talk about the endings and were they effective and whatever. So I just think it's kind of interesting, just the two different takes.
Yeah, I also found out I was watching Good Girls. And in the show, one of the things about the show is that the characters will make bad decisions. Without the bad decisions, there's no show. But I'm not in the mood to watch people make bad decisions. I'm not in the mood to watch people make mistakes. And I had to switch to something else. I had to watch older wrestling shows. Or I think I watched the last football game I had on my DVR. It's just I'm not in the mood to watch certain things, which is weird because the world is so all of this. I think that's why a lot of people are turning to fantasy or things like that, because here's the thing. I was watching the football game and I could not get out of my head. There are a lot of people there. That's a big group of people there. And that was in March. oh, God, I wonder how many of those people are infected now. And I could never get it out of my head. So, again, both jobs, I'm working tons and tons and tons of hours. I actually put in for a week off in early May, and it got approved, but I, you know, I also know that they may pull it at any time. There are a lot of people I know, there are people who, you know, are calling it the job, who are being laid off or furloughed or just flat out, there's no job here. And, you know, that's very worrying because, you know, think about in 2007, 2008, when that recession hit, the unemployment rate got to 10%. We're going to have an unemployment rate probably higher than the Great Depression. Now, once this passes, businesses are going to open up, or will they? AMC, the big movie chain, has said they probably won't be able to come out of this because they owe a ton of money. And, hey, they don't have money to pay that debt. How many businesses were, okay, yeah, we carry a certain amount of debt and we'll pay it, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, they don't have money coming in. They don't know when they will have money coming in. How much of our economy and our jobs and everything was this house of cards that was, okay, we got to make money this week to pay for the stuff we bought weeks and weeks and weeks ago? How many people do you know who are in the same boat who, you know, okay, they've missed a paycheck and they're already in trouble? You know, there was that statistic from a couple of years ago that always jumps into my head where over half of Americans don't have $400 in savings. We will come out of this different. And in a way, I hope we come out of it a little like the people who came out of the Depression, who they don't live through debt. They don't live on, well, I know I'm going to be making money in the future, so I'll spend it now. Once I got a job that paid me well, first thing I did was open up a savings account. And the first thing I did was set up so automatically a certain amount of my check goes into that savings account. Every other Friday when I get paid, that amount goes in. Boom. Every time. And, man. And because of all this stuff, you know, you go to the grocery store, now we have to wear masks. I don't have anything that can be made into a mask. I ordered a couple online. They're going to be here late this month. Why? Because everybody's ordering masks. Who had a damn mask? The group home is very stressful because twice now we've had where we think this person may have it. We're on lockdown. We all have to wear PPE when we work, robes all the time. But still, you come into work and it's okay. Did someone bring this into this house where these people are all, their immune systems are compromised? It's stressful on all sorts of levels. And I know that there are people who say, I've been stuck in the house and I'm bored. Oh my God, how I wish I could be bored. Last week, every day, I was up at 7, working by 7:30, and by the time I got home and was ready to go to bed I basically would get home between 10:30, 11, fall down on my bed to get some sleep, be up the next day at 7. So I imagine there are people who work in hospitals and health clinics and even grocery stores that are dealing with the same thing. And you're going to see, you know, you can't keep that up forever. You're going to start to see people make mistakes. People get burned out. I know I'm driving up to the group home and, you know, those electronic billboards that change their messages. Cub Foods, we're hiring. Target, we're hiring. Walmart, we're hiring. Joe, pull me out of this. What are you geeking on?
Oh, I was just going to say, I was kind of bummed because I just saw a headline where the Postal Service could shut down in June, which on the plus side would give us more time to talk comics because I wouldn't be talking about what I'm doing on the eBays no more. I don't think that's going to happen. But so I did mention the Jim Lee auctions. Those were kind of cool. I got to give a kudos to WWE. Did you see the t-shirt they're offering? I wasn't there.
Yes.
WrestleMania 36 t-shirts. I guess they also have a one of their old logo in your house, WrestleMania 36. So I haven't seen that one, but I'm really, really excited. I don't know if I'm going to buy it, but if I ever was going to, that would be the ones to buy. I actually did get to read some comics. The weather up here has been nice. I've been able to sit out on the back porch. I'm trying to keep away from my wife because she's still working from home. But and I mean working, you know, she doesn't get a chance to take a breather like some people would, because there's always somebody banging on her door trying to do something. But I try to, you know, she's stressed as well. I keep telling her, hey, you are working, you know, just plus she's her countdown to retirement clock is under 2 years. But when I wasn't in her way, I got to read some stuff. I did read the True Believers Savage She-Hulk for a buck. Which was fun, just to go back. I can't help but think if they do a She-Hulk live-action TV show, this would be the origin to do. You could probably get, what's his name, Mark Ruffalo?
Ruffalo.
Fardo? Anyways, have him show up as the, you know, Banner. You know, if you want, if you avoid the CGI like they did in this, have it so that... you know, this takes place before Avengers Endgame or after or whatever. And, you know, cause I mean, the whole thing was, is they never really, you know, when he hulked out, you didn't see the Hulk. He just, I can't. And he busts through the wall, you know, oh, look at the wall. And then earlier the next day, he just runs away instead of going back to help, Jennifer. And then Jennifer, of course, hulks out. So this was a buck. This was a lot of fun, regular stuff, enjoying X-Men. I have no idea where Hitchman's going. I waffle between wondering if the X-Men are the bad guys in this particular Hitchman saga or if they're the good guys.
Which is the coolest part of it.
Yeah. And there's always little panels. Like I was talking before about X-Men Fantastic Four. I got issue 3. Minor freaking. I have no fucking clue when I'm going to see 4. But it was fun to read. And, of course, I highly recommend I recommended it last week when Sabrina was on the show. Some other fun ones. And, again, these are ones I've talked about in the past. But Archie and Kathy Keene, I believe it's Archie 712. And I've just been enjoying it. I like the fact that they didn't cut short the Sabrina-Archie romance. Have you been reading this, Corey?
Not yet, because I'm waiting for the end of the Sabrina story.
Oh, okay. You haven't gotten it yet, or you just haven't read it?
Haven't read it yet.
I don't remember if Archie knows she's a witch or not. I've got to go back and reread him. So if you read it and see it, you can let me know. Next, Gwen Stacy 2 came out. A lot of fun. I am enjoying the living heck out of Star Wars Darth Vader. I'm beginning to think I made a mistake by not picking up the regular Star Wars, because this takes place right after Empire Strikes Back, and I did not see this coming, the surprise in 2. Oh, and that's what I look for in comics. You got to keep my attention. Young Justice 14 was fun, not as fun as the other ones, but I think it's just because it's kind of a gathering of arms. And just a lot of fun to see different things. Loving Thor, the new God Thor. Wolverine 2 was good. A couple other ones I read: Doctor Strange 4, Superman 21, and Green Lantern Season 2. I gloss over those quick because those are books I got on my normal subscription. The one shot Road to Empire has me interested. I am getting that feeling I got when Civil War came out, where I wanted to pick up all this sounds so exciting that I may go nuts and try to pick up all the crossovers, or just wait till the inevitable super duper omnibus, or I don't know, maybe I'll go. I think I still got Marvel Unlimited. I could probably do it that way. But it's a good setup. It does a good job of, if you don't know what's going on or you're not familiar with things like the Kree-Skrull War, the Celestial Madonna, what John Byrne did with the FF or even the Young Avengers. This is kind of the setup for everything to let you know what's going on. And of course, when you get to the end, you see the graphic novels that are involved with this, so you can read along if you know it. And then, of course, the next Empire Reign is beginning, and then Empire Zero, Avengers, Fantastic Four. Nope. Besides, they're not coming out, so I guess I'm just going to cool my jets for a while. In terms of other fun things, I didn't really mention it much on the eBay stuff, but I found a really, really big batch of Lee Action Figure News and Toy Review and Tomart Action Figure Digest. These were the Bible during the 90s and into the 2000s if you were a serious toy collector, because not only would they tell you about toys coming out, but Action Figure News and Toy Review had a really cool price guide. And eventually they went into diecasts. So it got to the point where I had to actually bag the comics, because people would come in, just look up what they wanted and put it back on the shelf. And at $5 a pop, that was a lot of money to just be fumbling through. I, of course, owning the shop, could look at them at will. And I, even now, as I'm looking, like here I've got a copy of, let's see, this is number 40 from, now I got to look at small print. Tell you, when you get old and you can't see nothing. 1996. So some of the things they're talking about: Treadmasters, the Tarzan Epic Adventure line. Playmates had a new line called Primal Rage. Kenner's had a Slam Dunk. There was Corey's favorite, the Transformers. In 96, they were Beast Wars. And then they would go back and they would talk about some old stuff like Ideals Action Boy, the Captain. They had features like Japanese Star Wars figures. And they would run parts like Transformers 1988 Part 2, where they would show all the different things. They also had a couple different sections. Like the first one were toys that were hot coming out. And they would say, okay, and usually what it was is they would tell you, okay, this particular figure is short packed. This one isn't. These are starting to hit. And then they would also have an inventory. And this is always fun to read to see if they held up, because they're talking about Star Wars Galoob update. Apparently they were doing, if you remember, they were doing the metallic Darth Vader TIE fighter. And they were saying, if you can find it, they would gauge things between a $1 mark to a $3 mark, saying that whether or not they were high possible returns. And they were always fun to look at. Some of them, like Wildcats, second series, Void, and Voodoo, not necessarily collectible. The Great Equalizer happened when eBay formed in 98. When eBay first started, it was crazy silly, because you could put something on there that cost, you'd sell for $100 in the shop, I'd get $400. I talked with Corey a couple times, and maybe I'll talk about it next week, but when I had my shop, if Diamond Comics had closed when I had Crazy Comics, I would have closed. I mean, I already did, because of the whole thing where Civil War books that were supposed to come in September got pushed to October. And when I looked at the remainder books, I was like, I don't have enough to pay rent. And my rent was only $500. With the big shop, had it happened in the late 90s when eBay was hot, I probably could have just done, which I suspect some stores are doing now. Just go through your shop, take everything on eBay and throw it out there, be it an auction or be it not. I know Dreamhaven, our good buddies over there, have been popping up a lot of stuff on there, including some really hot stuff. So, yeah, I don't know the rest of the time if it would have worked. But if you had an order waiting at your local comic store that you didn't pick up, give them a call. Send them an email, send them a Facebook post, see if you can't get a hold of them and maybe either do the door pickup or have them deliver it or toss in a couple bucks for mail order. You know, these guys need help. And if they are in the shop, I imagine they'll be doing mail order. I don't know if almost, with the exception of our good buddy Steve Brown down in Cedar Cliff, I don't imagine anybody that's not in their store now wondering what's going on. In case you were worried, I did send our good buddy Sabrina a copy of Batman's Penis from Batman Damned number one. So, and it wasn't an unsolicited dick pic, so I don't want to hear any shit. Speaking of stores, I've often touted Candyland. That's been around since 1923. If you go to www.candylandstore.com, if you're in the Twin Cities area, they're taking orders. Well, I had a really huge eBay thing. It was like on Sunday, I had like 20 outstanding orders, and I was like, I'm not going to spend all day Monday doing this. So I boarded them up. I ran them out to the post office at the airport, which was open, and I didn't even have to talk to the guy. I just dumped them right in the bin. I said, ready to go. Carefully set them down in case one of our listeners is waiting for their order. But on the way home, I didn't walk about, but I did drive about, just enjoyed the sunshine. We had a gorgeous Sunday. And I drove by Candyland, and I saw people waiting in their cars. And I thought, hey, why not? I'll go check it out. I wasn't sure what they were doing, but they basically, the store is closed, and they got a really small shop. But you can call or online the order, and then they bring it out to you. Well, I called. Line was busy, and I walked away dejected. And I thought, screw this. I'm calling again. I got through. They only have one line, so and no waiting, because you know, in normal times, it's not a problem. You walk into Candyland, buy what you want. So I picked up some chocolate pretzels. I picked up their famous Chicagoland mix. And I picked up some Swedish fish for Chris. While I was waiting, another guy came up behind me. And as soon as I hung up, I said, call him. Well, then the lady came out, dropped off a curbside order. And then she turned to him and goes, I can take your order. And it was a social distancing between everything. Although, you know, when they had the a number of years ago, they did these paintings of peanut figures celebrating that Charles Schulz was here. And they're about our size. I remember thinking we should have gotten one for Hot Comics, Corey, and painted Spider-Man colors. But they wanted like $5,000 to do it. And I thought, eh. But they're still around town, and Candyland has it too. They sponsor. So I hid behind Snoopy's doghouse and carefully handed him my card. I keep hand sanitizer in the truck now. So, you know, and of course, like today, I had to do a quick Target run when I got back. You know, I do not touch anything. As soon as I unpack my groceries, I wash my hands and go from there. So just so folks take the extra caution when you do what you do. And hey, if you're bored, I got plenty of stuff to sell on the eBays. Oh, and by the way, until further notice, I'm no longer giving away keys to the Schrode compound.
Yeah, because I'm here all the time.
Yeah, I know. It's scary. You don't want to see Corey, even if he is wearing pants. I hope that helped you out, Corey. But, hey, we got to see. What are you geeking on?
I had some time off yesterday. And during that time, I got caught up on my now favorite comic strip in the newspaper. I was able to read all of last year's Nancy.
Ooh.
By Olivia James. I read the book that came out a little while back, which has the beginning of her on the strip.
What years are they?
They are 2018, oh. I think. It's the beginning of her on this.
Okay. I have a Nancy strip I've been dying to find, but it's an older one from the late 80s, early 90s, back when they revamped Nancy, even though the original creator had passed away. So you're of no help to me.
But, oh my God, you must read Nancy. it's funny. It really plays with the comic strip format. There are times it gets super meta. But it's all, even if it's just telling its regular story, it's so fun and so funny. And from a strip that even as a kid, I went, ugh. And now it's my favorite comic strip. I read the first four issues of the Hawkeye miniseries. Fifth one isn't out yet. But it's fantastic. I don't want to spoil anything other than the story begins with Hawkeye trying to take down a villain and the villain being able to get away with it because Kingpin is mayor of New York. And all of a sudden, things start to get weird. And it's one of Marvel's better miniseries. And a great use of Hawkeye. Anything I tell you would spoil it. Anything I tell you would spoil it. Other than the beginning, where Hawkeye captures a villain, and then the Kingpin goes, oh, no, he could go free. Cooking competitions are a huge hit at the group home. So I've really gotten into watching cooking competitions. what other comic stuff have I read? I really didn't have a chance to read a whole lot of comic stuff. When I did go to the grocery store, it was the dreaded Walmart. So I was able to pick up the last four of the Walmart books that have come out. Batman, Wonder Woman, Flash, and Titans. No, Swamp Thing. Titans came in my box day. It was issues four of Batman, Wonder Woman, Flash, and Swamp Thing. And, man, I'm sorry. These $5 books are fantastic. You now get more stuff than in a regular comic of new stuff, plus two or three reprints of older comics, and it's on good paper, and it's only $5. So if you do have to go to the Walmart, a lot of them have older issues with all the new stuff. And if you're craving some comics, go ahead and pick those up because those let DC know, hey, people are actually buying these outside of comic shops. They may, you know, for all we know, those may be the only comics that are printed over the next few months. Yeah,
you're going to wish you bought them. You heard it here first.
But other than that, I have been listening to a lot of podcasts on my way to and from the group home. Been listening. I actually started to get caught up on some older wrestling because AEW's Dark show is on YouTube. And the some of the clients at the group home like wrestling. And because there's no new WWE. And when we did watch WWE Friday night, they went, I don't want to watch this. There's nobody there. It's boring. So I went and we started watching AEW Dark, which is their YouTube show. So if you, Joe, you've got YouTube. You can watch AEW Dark. They've got really fun matches on there. And it's back when they had crowds.
Ooh, AEW Dark. Let me write that down.
Cool.
And comic-wise, I actually watched one of the documentaries that Sabrina recommended. I've been wanting to watch it for a long time, but I didn't have the time. And yesterday, like I said, I couldn't watch anything fictional because the fiction I like is very, you know, noir based. And the plot of noir is an okay, decent person makes a stupid mistake and then continues to make mistakes compounding it. I watched the Chris Claremont documentary on Amazon. And it was, you could tell that it was cheap because it was mostly interviews and then to show the characters rather than showing the characters from the movies and stuff. It's, oh, okay, here's a cosplayer as Storm. Here's a cosplayer as Kitty Pryde. And it was basically they were in a room with a green screen just in the costume and maybe they would make a hand gesture or two. But the interviews with Claremont were fantastic. Louise Simonson came off really well. Ann Nesenti, who was also an editor with Claremont, with Louise Simonson, and then took over after Louise Simonson. I'm just going to tell you this right now, Joe. Most of what Jim Shooter said was lies. Because it's like, no. Because there was one point where he talked about the death of the Phoenix. And he said something that was immediately contradicted by Claremont. I also remember Shooter saying something different in Phoenix, The Untold Story. Other things that he said about Marvel. When Jim Shooter's on the screen, just kind of take whatever he says with a block of salt. But Chris Claremont came off as very charming and actually still hurt that he was removed from the X-Men books, which I don't blame him at all. But they also have Jason Aaron in there, who has more the current creator. I've talked to a lot of comic creators from the 70s, and they all kind of have the same thing of when they were put on a character, it was theirs. Well, this is my character. And the creators who come in after the 90s are like, no, it's Marvel's character. I'm just there to tell some stories with it. And if I sell well enough, they let me tell my stories. And I think that's a very important difference that creators have gone through learning over the last 30 years. It used to be, well, I'm writing Spider-Man, therefore Spider-Man's mine, and I could do what I want with them. I could tell the Spider-Man stories I want. And there are some creators from the 60s and 70s that are still upset that they were removed from a character and some other creator was put on it. And I understand that, because in the 70s, you were kind of, okay, this is your character, and you're on it until sales drop. And if sales drop to a certain point, the book will either be canceled or it will be sent to somebody else. And then by the time you get to the later 70s, it's no, it's our character, and these are the stories we want told. And then in the 80s, there was that tug and pull between creators and companies where you heard a lot about creators' rights. After the 90s, people learned that, hey, these are Marvel's characters. These are DC's characters. If I want to own my characters, I have to do it myself over at Image or self-publish or go to one of the other companies. And now, thankfully, creators just have that in mind. It's one thing I always love when Brian Michael Bendis gave an interview. He said, I'm lucky to be popular right now because eventually this is all going to fall apart. Eventually they will remove me from Avengers. Eventually they will remove me from Ultimate Spider-Man. Eventually, you know, my time will be up. And there are a lot of creators who came into Marvel with him, and then they made their name and they made their money and they went back to Image and they created their own stuff because they know how the system works. I'm not saying the people in the 70s were stupid. They were told that here's how the system works, and the company changed it on them. Now, everybody who gets into comics kind of knows what the deal is. Yeah, you're creating this character for Marvel, and you may get a piece of it, but it's their character. You're creating this character for DC, and they may give you royalties, and you may get a nice bonus check when it shows up in a movie, but it's not yours. And if they want, they can shut you down from drawing that character, even if you created it. Why? Because it's theirs. You created it on their dime, using their characters as your background. And I think it's better that creators know that going in, rather than having it sprung on them. I can't tell you how many stories there are about, you know, back in the 60s and 70s. Okay, maybe it is legal, but it's not enforceable. Okay, maybe it is enforceable, but we don't know. But now everybody knows, if everybody knows, the company and the creators, it's fair. It's when one person has incorrect information that makes it a mess. But the Claremont movie is really, really good. And if you were a fan of the X-Men from 1975 up until he left in 91, you need to see it. And what fascinates me the most is how Claremont talks about how he wanted on this book because nobody else cared. And then it completely grew out of control to the point where this thing that he'd created, he had no say in it anymore. And I will end with this weird part of Chris Claremont's story that they don't touch on and nobody seems to talk about that much. Joe, did you know that Chris Claremont is employed by Marvel? He has an exclusive deal. He can't work for anybody else. And yet there hasn't been a new Chris Claremont comic since the Nightcrawler series that he was writing was canceled. They're literally paying him not to go anywhere and write for anybody else. Which I guess is a nice retirement plan because he is in his 60s, but still, weird. Believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us blather on about comics for 2 hours during a time period when there are no comics.
You are dedicated. We love you.
So you've got even more to listen to while you're at home. Go ahead, put on the headphones, walk around the lake, walk around the block, get some exercise in, or just listen to us while you're cleaning. But follow the instructions, keep your social distance, don't go out if you don't have to, and if you have someone in your family who's an essential worker, do what you can to make it easy for them because they are really getting stressed now. And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most, even if we haven't got a new one in a while. Joe?
You know, I wanted to post a joke about sodium, but I was like, nah, people wouldn't understand. But I did find Forrest Gump's password, 1 Forrest 1. No, that wasn't right. I shouldn't do about that. I should tell you about the man who fell into an upholstery machine. He's fully recovered. But you know how we podcasters stay cool? We have many fans. And thank you, Corey. And to whoever who stole my copy of Microsoft Office, I will find you. You have my word. Hit my music. Funk is on a roll.
Done, bitches!